This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. The United States will support an inclusive, credible Haitian government. Laura Lachman, the State Department's acting Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere's Affairs, told VOA on Wednesday the United States is encouraging Haitian political leaders, civil society, and the private sector to find a political solution that will lead to presidential and legislative elections in the Caribbean island nation later this year, following last week's assassination of President Jovenel Moise. A commission made up of representatives of all sectors of Haitian civil society plans to meet later today to sign a political accord that will name a new president. Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro is in Sao Paulo hospital for tests to determine if he will need emergency surgery because of an intestinal obstruction. President's office initially said Wednesday he was being examined because of persistent hiccups and that he was feeling well. Bolsonaro has undergone several operations since being stabbed in the abdomen during the 2018 campaign. The Biden administration said Wednesday that it is prepared to begin evacuation flights for Afghan interpreters and translators who aided the U.S. military efforts in the nearly 20-year war. The Operation Allies refugee flights out of Afghanistan during the last week of this month will be available first for special immigrant visa applicants already in the process of applying for U.S. residency, according to the White House. A State Department spokesperson declined to detail how many Afghans are expected to be among those evacuated in the first flights. For more news, please join us at voanews.com. By remote, this is VOA News. More than 93,000 people died from drug overdoses here in the United States last year. A record, experts say, was partly triggered by the isolation that many experienced during the height of the coronavirus pandemic. The government reported Wednesday that the 2020 total easily surpassed the previous record of about 72,000 deaths in 2019. Health experts say that while prescription painkillers once played a key role in U.S. drug overdose deaths, heroin, and then, in recent years, fentanyl, a dangerously powerful opioid, proved exceptionally lethal. The government's Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said its studies showed fentanyl was involved in more than 60% of the overdose deaths last year. Residents in Sydney, Australia will remain under lockdown for another 2 weeks as officials continue to struggle to contain a growing outbreak of the Delta variant of COVID-19. The lockdown was first imposed on June 26 after a Sydney airport limousine driver who had been transporting international air crews tested positive for the variant. More than 800 people have since been infected, including 97 new infections reported Wednesday. Two people have died in the current outbreak in Australia. Australia has been largely successful in containing the spread of COVID-19 through aggressive lockdown efforts, posting just 30,429 total confirmed cases so far and 912 deaths, according to the Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center. Cuban authorities restored internet access on Wednesday following 3 days of interruptions after unprecedented protests erupted over the weekend. The French news agency reports that access to social media and messaging apps such as Facebook, WhatsApp, and Twitter remained blocked. At the State Department, spokesman Ned Price said shutting down information pathways does not address the needs of Cuba's people. One person has died and more than 100 have been arrested, including independent journalists and opposition activists, since anti-government protests broke out in the communist-ruled island over the worst economic crisis there in decades. As always, for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, reporting by remote, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 15, and here are some of the stories we are covering. In Eswatini, the opposition has called for yet another pro-democracy protest this Friday.
We are hoping to send a clear message to the world that despite the brutality that was unleashed by the king 2 weeks ago, we remain unshaken in our peaceful quest to bring about political change in this country.
Somalia has its first female presidential candidate. Kenya is developing a policy framework to help young people gain skills for the job market. Gambian lawmakers unanimously passed the Persons with Disability Bill. And a former member of Gambia's military junta is sentenced to death by hanging.
Having found guilty of the murder of Usman Koro Cisse in cold blood, and having considered that this court does not have any discretion under Section 188 of the Criminal Court, the convict Yakuba Touré is hereby sentenced to death by hanging.
And there are mixed feelings as government relocates traders of Liberia's largest marketplace in Monrovia. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Political parties and civil society in Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, have called for a mass pro-democracy protest this Friday, July 16. A week-long protest earlier this month to demand more political freedom led to the death of as many as 42 people, according to the opposition. Mlongisi Makanya, president of the band People's United Democratic Movement, or PUDEMO, says one purpose of Friday's protest is to send a clear message to King Mswati III that either he agrees to an all-inclusive dialogue with all stakeholders in Eswatini, or he will find himself in a dustbin of history, the Museum of Shame.
The purpose of Friday's protest is twofold. One, it is to pay tribute to those who have paid the ultimate price for the rights of Swazis to express themselves when they have grievances. The second one is to send a clear message to the king that there is no turning back now. If either he agrees to engage in a meaningful, all-inclusive dialogue with all stakeholders in this country, or he will find himself in the dustbin of history, the Museum of Shame. We are hoping to use the protest on Friday to send a clear message to the world that despite the brutality that was unleashed by the king through the soldiers and the police 2 weeks ago, we remain unshaken and undeterred in our peaceful quest to bring about political change in this country.
As you know, several people were killed and others wounded during the other protests earlier this month. Are you not concerned about another possible violence?
We are, and we think that it is natural to be concerned about safety. However, we believe that the nobility of the cause we are engaged in far outweighs personal, physical safety.
King Mswati III has called for Sibaya for this Friday. At the same time, you are calling for this mass protest. Why not go to attend the Sibaya and hear what the king is going to say?
We have attended a number of Sibayas before, and we made contributions there where the majority of Swazis spoke clearly and loudly on the things that they wanted to see happening. None of those things were ever implemented. But most importantly, we do not believe that a king who has given an order to the armed forces to shoot unarmed Swazis and kill more than 70 still possesses a moral authority to call them for Sibaya. You will remember that the nation has not even heard a word from the king, not even a word of condolence to the families who have lost their loved ones. We think that the calling of Sibaya is nothing but an attempt to distract us from the task at hand, which is to fight for our inalienable rights and freedoms. We also think that the opportunistic calling of Sibaya is meant to distract the process of SADC Troika, because we think that calling any other activity that has a potential of undermining the independence of the work of SADC Troika should not be entertained.
You mentioned the SADC Troika. The government of Eswatini has announced or confirmed that the SADC fact-finding mission that visited Eswatini earlier this month will be back in Eswatini on Thursday, July 15. Do you plan to meet with the SADC fact-finding mission?
Definitely. We plan to meet with the SADC fact-finding mission, present our dossier, take them through the problems in the country, and hopefully get an opportunity to take them to go and meet the victims of Mswati's brutality. Alternatively, afforded an opportunity to bring the victims of this brutality, more especially the families of the killed people, those who were shot and recovered, and those who have been made to languish in jail, denied family visitation and legal representation.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for affording us the opportunity.
Mulongitse Makanya is president of the band People's United Democratic Movement, PUDEMO Opposition Movement of Eswatini. He was speaking with us from the capital, Mazini. Somalia's leaders, almost all men, have for years struggled to tame the Horn of Africa nations' insecurity and corruption. Lawmaker Fazia Yusuf Haji Adam says it is time for a woman's touch. And on Tuesday evening, she announced her candidacy for president in October's indirect election. But as Mohamed Kahir reports from Mogadishu, getting enough support from Somalia's lawmakers, the vast majority of them men, will be a challenge.
Fauzia Yusuf Haji Adam says she'll bring a new lease on life to the country if elected by prioritizing security, economic empowerment and education. Her male counterparts, she says, have failed to do so.
We've been waiting for men for so long to sort out the problems of Somalia, but till today we see there are no solutions. So I've decided to stand for president, and I have no doubt I will do a much better job than men. If you go to Bangladesh for the last 50 years almost, there are women leaders replacing each other. And it's the most conservative country in the Islamic world. The most populous country is Indonesia. There was a lady who was in charge. Pakistan, with so many other Muslim women, including Tanzania, including Singapore.
Somalia's indirect elections, scheduled for October, will see the members of parliament selected by the clan delegates. Members of parliament then decide who will be the next president. Some citizens, like Abdurrahman Omar in Mogadishu, believe that if given the opportunity, Fauzia, a former deputy prime minister and foreign minister, can bring change. He says, I'm happy to welcome a female to run for the office of the president in Somalia. He says, Ms. Fauzia was tested and has knowledge and vision for leadership. Likewise, women have been entrusted with various positions, and if females are elected as president, they will lead to a positive change. Somalia is a Muslim nation with conservative traditions that make a majority of the citizens reject female leadership. Omar Hussein is among those who think along traditional lines. He says he does not back the idea of a female to contest for a leadership position in Somalia. Somali culture, as well as Islamic traditions, bar women from holding such high positions with immense responsibilities. Anwar Abdel Fattah, a lecturer at Somalia's National University, says it's not impossible for Fauzia to win the presidential election in parliament, but she will have to overcome long-standing traditions.
It's democratic maturity to see women vying for the head of state in Somalia, considering the support of the expected 30% of women parliamentarians and few men who support a new leadership. However, despite her ambitions, Ms. Fauzia will face a stiff challenge from a strong Islamic and deep-rooted Somali culture that regards me as the only custodian of leadership.
Somalia's presidential and parliamentary elections were delayed last year following disagreements among political leaders about the process. Lawmakers briefly extended the term of President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo, only to withdraw the extension in the face of international and Somali opposition. Mohamed Kaye for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
As the world marks International Day for Youth Skills today, Thursday, UNESCO says young people aged 15 to 24 are particularly exposed to the socioeconomic consequences of the pandemic. UNESCO says school and workplace closures are leading to learning and training losses as major life cycle transitions are made difficult. As Marie Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, Kenya is in the process of developing a policy framework to certificate schools to help young people develop skills for the job market.
The United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, in a survey says that most learning institutions were closed during the pandemic, hence affecting the academic calendar of at least 157 million learners across the world. In Kenya, the government has embarked on equipping youths to be fit for the job market. Concerned Worldwide U.S. award winner Kenyan youth Faith Atieno, founder of Art 360 Kibera, started the foundation with the aim of empowering young people from the slums.
We offer a space for youth and kids from Kibera to come and express their artistic abilities, and we work together to improve what they have to the next level. On this day, I want to appreciate and acknowledge every effort that any youth is putting in when it comes to creativity.
Faith says through her foundation, creativity has benefited the youths in Kibera slums. Another youth, Calvin Sochieng, who is a communication strategist at the Art 360 Kibera, says the challenges most youth face are within the community and that there is need for innovation among the young people.
The issues that are in Kibera are so wanting, and these are things that we had to just come into them. Need for innovation to bring out skills in other youth so that together we can make this world a better place to live in.
In a survey conducted by UNESCO and International Labour Organization ILO on technical and vocational education and training, TVET, the institutions are crucial for all stakeholders to ensure the continuity of skills development and to introduce training programs to bridge skills gaps. Director Technical Services at the Kenya National Qualifications Authority, Stanley Maindi, said that Kenya is ensuring the quality of training the youths gain for job market is competitive at international level.
The aim is to ensure that the quality of training is high and meets the national and industry standards and of international comparability. So the country is in the process of developing a policy framework to recognize and certificate every competency that exists in the market.
Maindi says lack of qualified skills for the job market among the youths has been a challenge to the young generation.
There is this belief that most youth in many developing countries, Kenya included, are unskilled. This is a case of twofold, whereby for the youth do not have any skills at all, or these youth have skills that are not relevant to the labor market demands. And therefore, there exists the challenge of mismatch between what academia is producing and what the labor market requires.
Today's World Youth Skills Day 2021 will pay tribute to the resilience and creativity of youth throughout the crisis. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 15. The High Court in Banjul, Gambia, on Wednesday sentenced a former member of Gambia's military junta to death by hanging. Yankuba Toure has been found guilty for the murder of Usman Koro Sise, Gambia's former finance minister. As Pandero Umbaya reports from Raleigh, North Carolina, Wednesday's verdict took the nation by surprise.
A closure has finally been made in the murder case of the late Gambian finance minister,
Usman Koro Cisse with Justice Ibrahim Ajayte delivering a landmark judgment on Wednesday. The former Junta Council member and local government minister, Yankuba Toure, has been found guilty on murder charges.
In my opinion, the evidence of Ensa Mendi, Hamad Jangong, Lamin Du supports the testimony of Alhaji Kanye that after hitting the deceased with pistol, there was blood all over the house of the accused person, and that they were instructed to clean the house. The charred remains of the deceased were found in his official car, which was burned to ashes along the Sokoto Jambur Highway.
The late finance minister was killed in June of 1995. His death had attracted local and international outcry, with rights organizations calling on the former Jammeh regime to probe the former minister's death. But the former Jammeh regime has always denied responsibility for Koro's death. But with the advent of Gambia's Truth Commission, evidence have emerged about the details surrounding Koro Cisse's murder. Yankuba Toure refused to testify at the TRRC while citing constitutional immunity.
I do not recognize the legitimacy of this commission when I have constitutional immunity. Mr. I am not going to continue further. I would tell you. You may also use all your legal tools and then we will proceed and see.
Toure's refusal to cooperate with the TRRC landed him in court.
I must say that all the prosecution witnesses gave evidence to support this piece of evidence. Alhaji Kanye, evidence shows that the accused person, Peter Singate, Edward Singate, left with the body of the deceased in his official vehicle.
Several witnesses were called to testify. In handing down his verdict, Justice Jayte noted that the prosecution had proven its case beyond all reasonable doubts.
Sentence. Having found the convict guilty of murder, the murder of Usman Koro Cisse in cold blood, and having considered that this court does not have any discretion under Section 188 of the Criminal Code, the convict Yankuba Toure is hereby sentenced to death. And pursuant to Section 252 of the Criminal Procedure Code, the said sentence of death shall be by hanging.
VOA contacted lawyer Lamin Boj, a senior member of the Gambia Bar Association, to seek his reaction on the judgment.
Personally, it looks like a balanced judgment because the sentence is like compared to the offense and the nature of the offense committed. It's like an equilibrium. Yeah, that is a balanced scale. That is the symbol of justice. That means equality. And that means not a tooth for a tooth, but a right and offense. The punishment should be commensurate with the offense. And I think that is the reason why the judge handed down the sentence of death by hanging.
Mboj has called on Gambians to learn from the court ruling, arguing that no one is above the law. The death penalty was last implemented in the Gambia in 2012, with 9 death row prisoners executed under Jammeh's rule. Toure has an option to file an appeal against the judgment. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The Liberian government this week relocated the Red Market, the country's largest and busiest marketplace, located in the Paintsville suburb of the capital, Monrovia. The government says the new location will provide a safer environment for marketers. But as Rita Jilabwe reports from Monrovia, Liberia, the marketers have mixed feelings about their new location.
The plan to relocate the Red Light Market began in May 2011 when President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's government began the demolition of the Omega Navigation Tower in Paintsville on the outskirts of Monrovia. She said the purpose was to make way for the construction of a modern market. President Sirleaf said the U.S. Half a Million Dollar Project, sponsored by the Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, will ease congestion at the Red Light area. But the Omega Market Village was not fully completed when it was dedicated on July 23, 2016 by President Johnson Sirleaf. In March 2019, President George Weah broke grounds for the construction of what he called 14 Kobacho International Market in the Omega area. The market was completed and dedicated by President George Weah on October 9, 2020. Speaking during the dedication ceremony, the Liberian leader said said the aim of the project is to provide a safe environment for marketers. He says the relocation will enhance vehicular and human traffic in the red light area.
Also, want to make sure that you live a beautiful life while you're in the market. The project for Somalia is coming. The project for Cobra Factory is also on the way. We don't want casualties when the roads are paved and good. Because when the road is wide, it's big, people will be crossing.
Authorities say the new 14 Gobachop Market will have over 3,000 tables, offices, male and female bathrooms, warehouses, car parks, electricity, among other amenities. But marketers ignored government mandate to be relocated to the new market area, prompting Ministry of Public Works authorities to storm the red light market with bulldozers on Sunday, July 11. Marketers were forced to move to the newly constructed 14 Gobachop Market, but with mixed feelings. Here is cross-section of their views.
I love Ominga. I love where the president has located us.
The only challenge here is the government saying that if you see a vacant area, you got to go there and press the place. You sit there for the meantime. Maybe they will come and locate every one of us.
No space. And when we stay up there, they will have to get our market back to read it and keep it.
When I go, so they say they play for people. So I don't get no place.
We just need a warehouse and a public toilet.
We are the step. We're just moving up and down. We don't know where to go.
The new 14 Gobachop Market project was implemented by the Liberia Agency for Community Empowerment, LACE, situated on 5 acres of land. LACE says the 14 Gobachop Market is the biggest market facility ever constructed in Liberia. The Liberian government says the project costs US $3.8 million and is funded by the government of Japan. Rita Jrabwe, VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
And that's it for this Thursday, July 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Tracy Carter filling in for Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely day.
Always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa news. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to ndumbulo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series, education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.